Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this June 2nd, 2023. It's 10:06 on the clock. Have your host, James J., here. At 10:30, we're to welcome in Christy Egge. She is with the Wood County Health Department. Looking forward to talking with her. We're going to talk with Representative Scott Krug in just a moment. I did want to let you guys know a programming note. This will be the final Morning Magazine in this time slot on Monday. Of course, Morning Magazine will be moving to the 3 o'clock spot, and it will be Midday Magazine. So keep that in mind. But for guests like Scott, you'll still be calling in at the same time. We'll still be recording it at the same time and everything. Scott, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing good here. Dealing with some changes and everything, of course, but that's life. A little bit something about that, I'm sure.
that's the theme of the month for June. Not only is it dairy month in Wisconsin, it's everywhere, everything, all at the same time month for me. So
yeah, I can only imagine. Just to add to your plate, of course, overnight we had the debt bill ceiling. We're not going to have to default on this. That goes forward. Senate sends a debt ceiling legislation to President Biden's desk, where he is expected to sign it. Any takes from this right off the gate?
Well, you know, it's always interesting when you can finally get a bill that Mark Pocan and Ron Johnson agree on, or that Brian Stile and Tammy Baldwin agree on. So the voting was all the way across the board in Wisconsin for our reps. So it's always a nice thing when there's a mix of yeses and noes from both sides. So
I mentioned that this means, I think, arguably the biggest headline of this, no default on the national debt. That's certainly huge. Are there other things about this that maybe people that are just reading headlines or not, you know, getting too in-depth in this should know about this bill being passed?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's a clawback provision in there for a lot of the unspent COVID money that was originally thought to be allocated out to the states. So there's some implications for Wisconsin on some money that the feds had promised that might not materialize. So we're just keeping our eyes on that. Thankfully, we've got a sizable surplus here. We don't need to rely on federal COVID money, which is great. But yeah, there are some implications.
I don't think that anybody thinks that we can just stop spending. Our government can just stop spending, and that's going to, you know, solve everything, or, you know, the debt as far as that goes. But it does seem like all governments from the local levels on top are starting to be focused a lot more in on finance, a lot more in on the how much we're spending.
Well, and that should be the primary focus, right? And I say this all the time, is that I am in Madison to be a fiscal conservative. I am not in Madison to be a social dictator and decide who can do what in their home and how and when and all that stuff. I want to make sure that when the taxpayers send a dollar to the state of Wisconsin, it's being spent the best way it can. And if we don't need it, it's being sent back to the taxpayer as much as it can. So it is great to see that, because we can all agree on those fiscal issues, because we all manage our household budgets. We should all know that there are things that we can do and there are things that we can't do and things that we want to do. What those differences are. And that just harkens back to all of the things that we talk about, even to grade school kids and elementary kids and junior high. And you want to talk about financial literacy and making sure you set yourself on the right foot and the implications of finances is what everything the legislatures and the state and federal level should be about, is finances.
Recently, you and your colleagues got a project completed that's 20 years in the making. I'd like to talk about that and how it affects communities.
Yeah, I mean, this is. I finally got onto the local government committee this session because, you know, being a county board supervisor here in Adams County, I hear from my fellow supervisors and department heads like, hey, you know, we need to get a better share of what we send to the state of Wisconsin. So in the shared revenue program, the formula had been frozen for over 20 years, and communities like, say the town of Big Flats, for example, have been frozen at a bottom level that just made it almost pointless for them to be in shared revenue, even though they sent it all to Madison and never came back. So this session finally tackled this project, and through the local government committee and hearings and a lot of negotiations, we finally got a bill through the assembly, still waiting in the Senate to move, and hopefully it will in the next couple of weeks, that will return all of those tax dollars that people send to Madison back to local governments to make decisions on local projects and local priorities. And I love this idea that we can finally put some more control into the hands of our local governments to make sure they're doing the things they need to do. And on top of that, it also invests heavily in public safety measures for our cities. It makes sure that, you know, and part of the bill is to deal with the Milwaukee pension problem that's existed for 35 years. And I said from the beginning of the session, there's going to be one big kumbaya bill that fixes a lot of problems, and I think the shared revenue bill is one of those bills.
It's pretty hard to find anybody on either side of the aisle too against this idea. I think of a lot of things like when it comes to this that are still regional. Baseball is still pretty regional. Radio is still pretty regional. There's no one size fits all for these things. Government, in its essence, should be regional.
Right, and I mean that's the whole point of what, you know, Wisconsin has got many, many more layers of government than most other states, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why the shared revenue program is even more important, is because we want to make sure that individually our communities can make the right decisions, but we also have to keep an eye on the communities that aren't making the right decisions and help them, you know, and that's where some of the regulations in the bill come in, saying, hey, you know, we get you've got a problem here, but we don't want you doing this anymore. So there's a ton of negotiation that goes into a bill like this that you've got, you know, people that are leaders in Adams County agreeing with leaders who are in the city of Milwaukee on a bill, which I've never heard of, and I'm sure even some of my predecessors would say they haven't much heard of Adams County and the city of Milwaukee agreeing on a lot of bills.
Hmm. What does it mean to not only get, I mean, certainly what it means to the communities for getting this passed, but what it must mean to have something that you all have been working on for so long to get this finally passed through?
Yeah, I mean, it sets up a great, you know, budget process that we're, you know, finishing up here in June that we've been working on in connection with some of these bill ideas, and the shared revenue funding will be part of the state budget. When we get the bill done with the policy side of it, now we put the money towards it in the budget side of it, and I think we finally found a way that the Republican legislature and the Democrat governor can find a way to work together, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it may not be all in one thing at the same time, but we found a path that we can do policy in one bill, funding in another, and we're going to agree on it in the end. So no doubt that by the time the Joint Finance Committee, you know, reworks the state budget and puts it out for a vote, I have no doubt the governor will sign it like he has the last two. So I think, you know, we're in a really smooth place and almost a complete 180 from where we were, you know, 3 years ago.
What do you think changed?
It's pressure from back home, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk to people around here, like, why can't you guys just get something done? Like, great idea, you know? I've preached that common sense should reign the day in Madison for a long time, and I think it finally is starting to grasp, in the upper level, saying, yeah, you know, people are kind of ticked off back home that there's all this arguing and the headline chasing and all those types of things. They just want stuff done, especially when you've got close to a $7 billion projected surplus and there's needs in your communities. It's just time to put some things aside and to actually get your job done. So, and that's been the nice thing, is always telling people back home, hey, get back to your reps and senators and tell them what you want. Tell them what you need. Tell us how you think we can fix it. We're always open to those ideas, and I think it's just finally come to the top of the heap that people just want problems solved.
Mm-hmm. I agree with your answer. I just like to piggyback off it and add to it. I wonder if job security also comes into play. Because as you touched on right in the beginning there, hey, a lot of people, a lot of constituents saying, hey, what's getting done? Nothing's getting done. You're not going to be able to keep your job as a politician if you don't get things done. And I would think that has part of it, too.
Yeah, it always does. And I mean, those are things that we always, you know, do tons of listening sessions for. We send out district surveys. We, you know, gather as much input as humanly possible. And now some of the people, because of the possible changes in districts because of the Supreme Court race, some of those seats that people thought may have been safer in some parts of the state who may somehow feel a little more vulnerable might be listening to constituents a little bit more. Mm. So, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. There are some people who, you know, just have to have that job, and they'll do what they can to make sure it happens. And if that means they're representing their constituents' thoughts, that's a double bonus.
You know, and speaking of meeting with constituents, you and your staff did that recently, just the other day in Madison. You had some of our good friends and, you know, family members and stuff from the Adams Friendship School District by. What were you guys discussing? What was the conversation like?
Yeah, I think for Adams County in particular, in the discussion there is the school funding formula. You know, I mean, trying to get a grasp on how the legislature can come to the table and figure that one is the next biggest step. We finally did the shared revenue thing after 20 years, but the school funding formula has been locked in for 35 some years. And school districts like Adams Friendship, Wild Rose, some of those smaller, more rural districts that I have are absolutely losers right now in the shared revenue formula because they're low-income, high property value districts, meaning there's lots of tourism that comes to those districts, but not a lot of property tax driven by it, just more sales tax. And, of course, schools are funded off the property tax levy, so when you have a income-poor, property-rich district that keep losing year after year after year in the school funding formula. So we keep having these conversations with them, trying to figure out how to fix it in a way that's not going to hurt the people who are already winning, because, of course, they're not going to give up their wins, especially their reps and senators. So that's always the conversation when we have folks from Adams Friendship District over is, you know, how do we fix this formula so we don't keep losing 15% of our funding every state budget?
Yeah, on the surface, on paper especially, it's hard to wrap your mind around. We all understand that kids are the future. Kids are important. We need to make sure that we're taking care of our kids, our schools, our teachers, giving them the things they need to apply. But it seems like this is something we run into, if not every year, every couple of years.
It is, and that's one of the challenges. Like, you know, when I say there's winners and losers in that formula, it's really hard for those communities who are winners to say, I'd rather be on the equal side or the losing side, you know. So that's always the challenge when we adjust the school funding formula. So now in the next week or two here, I've been working with State Rep Armstrong from the Rice Lake area on trying to help find a way to, I don't want to say fix the formula, but a way to tweak it that will allow these lower revenue districts to have a floor where, you know, at least we're going to keep you where you're at and you're not going to keep losing money in the state budget moving forward. So we're trying to set this floor for these, I think, 23-some districts in the state of Wisconsin out of 400 that are just locked into this perpetual losing cycle. So that's why we have those conversations with our school districts, so they can keep us informed on the boots-on-the-ground perspective. And, you know, we always have to play devil's advocate on everything, and we do that with our school districts too, because declining enrollment is a massive problem, especially in central Wisconsin right now. So we're trying to figure out a way to keep those buildings open, even though there's less and less kids that are going through them. If you look at Lincoln High School's graduating classes last week, it was in the, you know, 280-some, whereas when I graduated from Lincoln in the 90s, mm-hmm. our graduating classes were 450, 480. So mm-hmm. that impact is real. When there are that many less kids coming and we fund education per pupil, there's going to be less dollars. So that's why we have to try to keep our foot on the gas pedal for workforce development and all of these other things that will eventually end up helping our schools.
Along with that, you know, child care is one of the things that certainly can affect this as well. Any movement on that front, anything being done or anything going on behind the scenes to address the child care situation?
Yeah, we just had a caucus on it last week when we were talking about upcoming priorities in the state budget. So it looks like the child care part of the budget for DCF, Department of Children and Families, will be up next week. So we're expecting some pretty major investments here. We're just not sure exactly where the Assembly and Senate are going to agree on it, but we know that the money's going to flow into that program and the SHARES program, which is a state-managed program for child care. So we'll see exactly how it shakes out, but we had a pretty good lengthy discussion at caucus on how important it is to help people get off the sidelines by being able to get child care slots for their kids so they can actually go back to work.
Hmm. Speaking with Wisconsin State Assembly District 72 Representative Scott Krug. And Scott, it's been a while since we've touched on this. The mill here in Wisconsin Rapids, any news on that?
No. That is just the craziest thing. So even working now in the Housing and Real Estate Committee, and we've been working on a lot of workforce housing issues on that committee, ideas have started popping up and, you know, redevelopments of some of those things. And some of these big box retail stores, some of these big empty, you know, buildings that we have, like the mill buildings and things like that, looking at even repurposing those now if you're not going to be able to get the, you know, a company like Billerud, nobody can force them to do anything, and they're sure not going to. So how do we how do we assuage them to at least turn over some control so we can solve some other problems if we're not going to be able to solve a manufacturing issue with it? So we're still hoping, waiting, reaching out, doing everything we can to get them to the table. I mean, there's been some brief conversations with congressional leaders in Belarus on some things, but there's just nothing coming out of them about what their future plans are and what could possibly happen. And I honestly, at this point, with the way it was shut down, the condition of some of the machines in that factory, I'm hard-pressed to say we're ever going to see 400 people making paper in, you know, number 16 building again. So it's a pretty dire situation trying to figure out how to get these foreign companies to relinquish some control. And it's even more frustrating looking back on how we had a bill to get a local company involved and we just couldn't get it across the finish line. So sometimes that is what it is, and you look to rebound in different directions, and I think we're doing really well, you know, in our tourism areas to help make up for some of those job losses and economic impacts. And so we always keep, and I'm glad that we took this chance to rework our economy around just the paper economy the last 15 years, because at some point it was going to come crashing down.
A phrase that I use all the time in radio, necessity is the mother of invention. You know, it's one of the more popular quotes of all time for a reason. It's forced us to, I think, not only put more into the, you know, into obviously tourism, but along with tourism, what's one of the things that brings people here? It's our lakes, it's our wildlife, it's our wooded areas, taking conservation more seriously and approaching that. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Joint Finance Committee, just 2 weeks ago, we just did the DNR section of the budget and the DAT cap portion of the budget, which is the farm and the DNR side working together, and put massive amounts of money into soil and water management programs to make sure that we can keep our lakes clean. Because, of course, like, I'm not busy enough, but I'm also in my lake district out here, too. So, of course, I get to hear those perspectives and take that back. And those investments and time and energy and effort all pay off to help us get where we are. So, I mean, that's why we've spent the last 10 years on site-specific regulations for the Wisconsin River system to make sure Lake Peatonwell can be clean. That's why we've spent so much time on taking all of the money supposed to come to the CAFO program and reallocating it back into regulation for those things. So, you know, there's 1,000 irons in the fire, and those exactly are the reasons why we're trying to make sure that we make those investments, we can start drawing people even more back to the state of Wisconsin to live, work, stay, and play.
Mm-hmm. Scott, you and I usually wrap up talking a little Brewers or, you know, Packers or Bucks or any of these teams and stuff in our local teams. And I do want to talk a little Brewers, but before we can get into anything too fun or about involving on the field, I have to talk about Rob Manfred a little bit in his comments. I want to journalistically let this out there right away. I'm not a fan of Rob Manfred, never have been. It's comments like this is part of the reason why. And I'll just read his comment for those that did not hear it. I remain confident that the Brewers are a great asset for the fans here in Milwaukee, and that the government entities are going to find a way to fund the obligation that they agreed to when the ballpark was built, and that they're going to do it because it's good business. Manfred said this at a local press conference a couple of weeks ago. Along with that, he also led it on that he was basically putting pressure on the team and the owners to that he would threaten to move them or those kind of things if they weren't to do this. A similar thing is happening. It did happen pretty much in Oakland with the A's. And I, for one, don't believe that there's any scenario where the Milwaukee Brewers are ever leaving Milwaukee. I don't think we're going to see that. I know that we're a little close to it in the state here, but even that being said, I got friends all over the country. I'm sure you do too. And I know that I know plenty of them that have a Brewer hat or have a friend or fans of players and things. I don't see this happening. But what is the likelihood of something like this? And what do you, as one of these politicians, not that you have a lot of sway in this, but when you hear these kind of things, it doesn't feel like it's anybody wins.
Well, okay, so here's the deal. So, like, I am the biggest Brewer fan in the state of Wisconsin, bar none, period. Nobody argue with me, period. That's all. No. But I am also a state elected official that, as a member of the legislature and the body that actually owns the Brewers building. I mean, they don't own the building. The state owns the building, right? Mm-hmm. So the governor had proposed us to spend some money to fix that building so we can continue leasing it. The Brewers had said, you know, we need your help to do that. I'm like, okay. So when Mark Anastasio bought this team for $300 million years ago, now it's valued at $2.6 billion, it put some skepticism in the mind of legislators mm-hmm. that the Brewers can't afford to make the repairs to Miller Park. Part B is it really stunk of politics when Manfred decided to come step in and say that, well, I should say not Miller Park, AmFam Field, sorry. And when Manfred come to say that AmFam Field isn't up to standard. And I, that really reeked of politics because I've been to Great American Ballpark. I've been to Wrigley Field. I love Wrigley Field, but you can't tell me that Wrigley Field is up to the standards that Manfred is talking that AmFam should be up to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to talk about stadiums across this country and risking franchises because their stadiums are not being kept to the standards of MLB, I think they need to start looking elsewhere before they start trying to threaten that the Brewers are going to somehow end up being relocated to San Antonio, which has been the talk and inside conversations. The owners, first of all, are not going to accept it, and the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin are not just going to say, oh, well, Manfred said we need to spend $500 million. Let's do it.
Yeah, I appreciate the breakdown there, Scott. And I agree with you. I there has to be a line in the sand, of course. But even with that, I don't see the team leaving or anything. But you can't let it be. Pushed around either. You've got to have a standard. This is not the same as the Oakland situation. The Oakland situation, they're having a hard time. They've had a hard time filling that ballpark since the Bash Brothers. Very different in Milwaukee. And I am you talk about risking things. I'm risking losing my card with my family, card with Chicago, like being able to go back to my city and all that. But I completely agree with you, Scott. I've been to both stadiums, and it's not even close. I love Wrigley Field. Wrigley Field's an institution. It's awesome, but you want to talk about some, you know, a stadium that needs to do upgrades. You got to go, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours down to be able to really. Milwaukee is not where you need to be having that conversation. That field, that stadium. Everybody that I know that's been there talks about how great it is, how family friendly it is. While also, you know, if you and I wanted to go catch a game, we could go have fun. It's just like we could with our families. There's other, like Camden Yards. They've been talking to the Brewers about things that they did to improve Camden Yards. So it not only seems like like you said, a political thing here a bit, but it also feels like starting a fire for no reason.
It really was, and it came out of left field. So, I mean, honestly, when the governor proposed this idea in the state budget, the Brewers hadn't even come to him yet. It was more direct conversation outside of the Brewers organization. They understand they got to deal with this a little more delicately because of the past issues with funding for their stadium and the past issues with funding for sports stadiums everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they wanted to be a lot more delicate about it, and other forces are kind of forcing them to say more than they really want to. I think in the end, the state will commit to extending the lease for the Brewers. The Brewers will be happy to keep the lease going, but there's going to have to be some investment from the Milwaukee area, not statewide, I don't think, to keep the Brewers Stadium up to par in some standard, not exactly what Manfred says he wants to do, but some standard upkeep. So,
In good news, the Brewers are a half game up on the Pirates. I don't know how they are, but they are.
The worst first place team ever. If they were in the AL East, they'd be 12 games behind and in last place. But they're not. They're in the NL Central, so we'll just keep riding first place for a while.
Yeah, you know, I mean, until the bats wake up a little bit better, and you know, you get to some people off the DL and everything. Why not? You know, if this is where they are right now, and they're not even at full capacity, it's not a bad sign.
Yeah, it's like a JV team. I tuned in the other day accidentally. I didn't know who half the guys playing were, actually. I'm like, all right, whatever. Fine.
We're excited to have Rafter Baseball back as well. Next time we get together, maybe we can talk a little of that. Scott, I always appreciate the transparency, the time, the fun that we have talking together. If people want to reach out to you, want to find out more, or just talk to you more about some of the things we've discussed, how can they do that?
Yeah, cell phone's easiest. 715-323-3293.
You have a great weekend, Scott. We'll talk again next month.
You bet. Take care.
We'll be back with more Morning Magazine right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.